Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Mackowitz. Bob, how you doing, my friend?
Surprisingly good, considering Austin Matthews banged up his hand and the Bills got smoked by the Chiefs. And last night, the Raptors lost to the Pacers. It hasn't been a great couple sports days, but I'm oddly optimistic considering it's a gray January morning in the middle of a pandemic.
This is full Toronto January gray. Like it's windy. It's gray. There's browns on, just a lousy day. But my favorite part about the weather is I got CP24 on, and I'm sure every news organization is doing this. They're all saying, brace for it. Here comes the snow. There's nothing news organizations like more than here comes the snow.
What do you think is a bigger red letter day around the newsroom? Is it there's a thunderstorm coming or a blizzard coming?
Oh, I'm going to go blizzard, because first off, the great thing about it is if they're wrong, you can't get sued. If a news organization is saying a senator did this and they never did it, well, that's when the lawsuits are coming. The snow don't sue. But yeah. Bob, and I've been watching it. You get phase one, everyone's preparing. Phase two, it's here. You know, phase three, how come we haven't all been shoveled out yet? Even though usually we never get past phase one.
Mm-hmm. The ability of the Torontonian public to be shocked every winter by big snow never ceases to amaze me.
It's great. Yeah.
Every single year. Who saw this coming except for everybody always?
For me, it's less shock and it's more, crap. You know what it's like, Bob? It's like that scene in Blazing Saddles. Like, never mind that shit. Here comes Mongo. Like, that's me when the first snow comes.
Okay, so here's the thing. I like the winter. I like the cold. Yeah. I don't like bitter cold, obviously, but it's not bitter cold that many days. Over the course of a winter, maybe what, like 5-10 days is really bad?
At most.
There's probably just as many too hot days in the summer. So your discomfort, it takes your picks. But here's the thing. You have a place in Florida, right?
Yes.
And I'm guessing the weather there is always pretty good.
Yes.
See, cold weather makes Canadians interesting. And here's the secret thing about being interesting. It sucks. Wouldn't you, in Naples, it's almost the same all the time. That's not very interesting. Oh, boo-hoo, I'm always comfortable. In life, being interesting sucks.
Let me tell you something, Bob. I absolutely agree. Because you know me, I'm against suffering. I'll notch down my interest level a couple points if it means I get to eat another crunchy grouper sandwich with a light breeze in my hair as I'm staring out at the Gulf of Mexico. I'll way take that over this crap.
And I would always be like, when I was a kid, how come the other kids don't like Tom Waits? Why am I so alone? Tom Waits is so good.
Shut up, nerd. New Kids on the Block are here. They're never leaving.
Exactly. Hey, attractive girl, do you want to go out with me to the Tom Waits concert? No. No, I do not, Mr. Interesting.
All right. Well, can I interest you in Stanley Kubrick's less famous movies?
Oh, that's so funny. Have you ever actually watched Barry Lyndon? I mean, really watched it?
Oh, sure. Everyone does 2001, which is an easy breezy film. But Barry Lyndon, that's where it's at.
It's 3.5 hours, and there's only 12 lines of dialogue. I have so many football questions to ask you, buddy. I do want to get to the Leafs and Raptors, but geez, the Super Bowl is set. Initial impressions on the weekend, bud. You are a football guy.
Initial impressions was, all right, if I did this in a sentence or less for both games, Tampa won because of their defense. Green Bay lost, not because of that Matt LaFleur field goal, but because the second and third interceptions thrown by Brady, Green Bay got negative 5 yards on those two possessions. Tampa's defense killed them. Green Bay did not make Tampa pay for the three Brady interceptions in the second half.
You're a Giants fan. Is it bittersweet to see Jason Pierre-Paul doing so well in Tampa Bay?
Oh, yeah. Oh, trust me. It was weird seeing. Wait a minute. Usually Jason Pierre-Paul is sacking Brady, not sacking the quarterback going up against Brady.
Mm-hmm. That's an amazing story. He blew off half his hand with a firecracker and the Pro Bowler again.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. He was great. You know what the best stat of that NFC Championship game is? Tom Brady has won as many NFC Championship games as Aaron Rodgers.
What do you mean? They've won the same number of NFC Championship games?
Aaron Rodgers has been to one Super Bowl. He won the NFC Championship game once. Tom Brady has been in the NFC for 1 year. He just won the NFC Championship game.
Sideshow Bob.
Yes.
That was really good, actually. They've won the same. Wow, that's good. Are you going to lead? Did you lead game day with that yesterday?
It got brought up pretty early as sort of a my brain is melting statistic.
Did you come up with it or did someone else?
Oh, no. Someone else did. But I gave credit. And by credit, I mean I credited myself with reading Twitter.
Well, that's the essence of show prep, isn't it?
It's all our sources.
So I got a few questions. We can either rapid fire them or you take your time with it, however you choose. But
yeah,
Tom Brady threw an amazing pass to end the first half and had a pretty bad second half. So who is Tom Brady in your mind going into the Super Bowl?
Tom Brady, he's still dangerous. Like he's not yet at the point of, you know, when the old quarterback suddenly becomes old, like when Dan Marino's last game, he lost like 63-7 in a playoff loss to the Jaguars. He's not that.
I have an analogy.
Yeah, do it.
Is he Brett Favre with the Vikings?
Yeah, he's absolutely Brett Favre. He's first year with the Vikings, Brett Favre, with the Vikings. Yeah, absolutely. Because listen, that first half, Brady looked great. You know, he was killing them on all these third and long conversions. It's just the second half. Now, one of the picks wasn't his fault. It went off the hands of Mike Evans. Mm-hmm. You know, but Brady, he's a guy that needs things around him to be working, and Tampa likes to drop the ball and lots of penalties. But Brady is still dangerous. You know, he proved it. He's just not dangerous for an entire game. But Tampa's defense can help cover up some of those mistakes.
To my untrained eye, here's what I saw from Tampa Bay on offense. That they did just enough at the right times to score enough points that their defense could win them a game.
Yeah.
You know, like Mike Evans had some bad plays, but he had some good ones. You know, Gronk broke one when they needed points near the end of the game.
Yeah.
You know, and he looked like Gronk does, you know, big and fast and like a tank rolling downhill. Brady had some bad passes, but he also had some beautiful passes. It was... I had to ask you this because I walked away not really feeling like, do I feel confident with Tom Brady? Because he, you know, we were joking the other day, he's clearly not Peyton Manning with the Broncos. I just don't have a feeling for who he is. And I don't know if he still inspires confidence in that dressing room because those guys aren't stupid and some of them are 20 years younger than him. And I don't know if they look at that guy and think the old man has one more in him or if they think, I think it can carry him over the finish line.
I think it's door number one. The team, Tampa hasn't won a playoff game since John Gruden got them a Super Bowl over the Raiders. That was like in 2002, 2003. They've had one winning season before this year in the last decade, and now they're in the Super Bowl. And listen, part of it is Lavonte David and Devin White. Some, you know, especially Devin White's getting better and better, and you know they've made some additions. But a lot of it goes to it's Brady. He's not going to turn the ball over. Ironically, I say this after he had three yesterday, but he's not going to beat James Winston. He knows how to complete the passes when you need to complete them. And I know that sounds like a cliche, but you know, he's a calming influence and he gives the guys confidence. Like, oh, wait a minute. We actually have an adult, a trained adult at that position.
It's funny you say that about calming influence. I felt that in the AFC title game, and we'll get to that more later. But just as a reference point, Patrick Mahomes, I felt calm watching, whereas Josh Allen, I didn't. And just
yes.
Even though they got down what should have been 10-0 and actually was 9-0, I never felt like Mahomes wasn't going to rally. Whereas when it was 14-9 and the Chiefs were up, I thought, well, they squandered their chance and here comes the pummeling. And I just didn't have the feeling that Josh Allen could rally them against the Chiefs. So to your point about the calm in the huddle, football is just so weird. We've said this a million times. It is the only sport where character has such a direct impact on what happens on the field.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And I think it's because, listen, every sport has sacrifice. Even baseball, I'm just talking physical sacrifice. Every sport does. You know, basketball players are incredibly tough. Even baseball players are. But with football, it is the sort of highest level. So you need that character because, like, wait a minute, if I'm going to go and do this to my body, I better make sure my leader's on the up and up and not some cheesy CEO who's got a Ponzi scheme on the side.
Oh, the side Ponzi. Okay, yes. So Aaron Rodgers, next question for you. To what extent do we hang this loss on him? Because people are very quick to hang Matt LaFleur for going for three instead of trying to score the touchdown. I would agree with that. However, you brought up an interesting point about conversions on third down or not being able to capitalize on turnovers. I thought Aaron Rodgers looked intermittently good, but mostly pretty beatable. And I was sort of shocked to see it.
Yeah, well, what that was, I think a lot of that was Tampa's pass rush. They sacked him five times, hit him like eight. They sacked him on the first series.
Yeah, but and he's the MVP, Matt. He's the MVP. Like,
yeah, you're right.
You make him $100 million guaranteed because even in the face of that adversity, you can claw out enough points to win. Like,
yes.
I don't see how this one doesn't stick to him.
It should stick to him. Now, he's got the human meat shield of Matt LaFleur, who's going to take it. But, yes, I forget someone tweeted this out that, a Tom Brady, one of his picks looks bad. But, again, to my point, Green Bay had two possessions after two Brady interceptions. One got no yards. One got -5. And then on top of that, that third down play near the goal line where Rodgers, he rolled out to his right. He had real estate. And instead, he sort of threw it a little bit over his body into a fairly well-covered player. And at that moment, I felt like, did Aaron did Aaron not see he had running room, or did Aaron just not want to get hit?
That was the big one. To me, it keeps coming back to that play. As much as LaFleur's decision to not go for it was a bad one, and you can feel it in the moment. It's like you're really giving Brady the ball with, 2.5 minutes left on the clock. But when he didn't run, like, I actually was pulling for Tampa Bay, so my heart sank when I saw the Red Sea part in front of Aaron Rodgers, and I thought, oh, he's going to scramble for the win. Or at the very least, he's going to be down at the one,
Yep.
And then he pulled up and threw that pass, and I thought, what the hell was that? If, in fact, and I'm going to make a statement which is maybe unfair, but I'm standing by it. If, in fact, he was tired of getting hit all day and that caused him to pull up, then it's on him because his job is to take that hit.
Yep. John Elway, when he finally won a Super Bowl, the famous run where he gets hit, he's an old man, he's like spun like a helicopter top, but he did that run. Like, yes, you got to do it.
If you're going to wince at your receivers for, better part of a decade, and you're going to be that arrogant alpha, you do not pass on open field. That's the kind of thing where I wonder. I would love to be a fly on the wall after that game with the Green Bay players to see how much Aaron Rodgers might be the single most talented quarterback in the history of the NFL, certainly up there with Elway and Marino. Like, he's in that rarefied air. But I wonder if they're getting tired of his shtick.
Yeah, but it's funny. It didn't really get brought up this year. It was a couple of years ago where the Rodgers as a bad teammate and a questionable leader, that was a big thing. Mm-hmm. I think this year when they drafted Jordan Love, then Aaron became became the victim instead of the victimizer, and just the bigger picture of how has he only been to one Super Bowl with all the talent, and it's all legit. But getting to that one play, I was watching it live going, oh, he's going to run. And then when he threw the ball, I'm like, why are you throwing the ball? The guy, no one was open. And then I'm like, oh, you've been hit a lot, haven't you? And yeah, I did. All those thoughts went through my head.
I haven't heard enough people talk about him pulling up, basically. Almost like a wide receiver not wanting to take the hit and passing on getting the first down. Sliding before, you know, sliding at the 8-yard mark. I don't know. I'm not a huge Aaron Rodgers fan, so it's pretty easy for me to want to pile on. I'm not a Brady fan.
Yeah. Either,
but there's something about Rodgers that really bugs me. I don't like smug, generally, and I find him very smug.
Yes.
And so I'm wondering, does he go back to Green Bay? This is obviously just stupid rosterbation on our part, but you know, you have a good feel for things. Do you think he'll be back?
I think he'll go back. He's got like 3 years left on the deal. They've gotten to the NFC Championship game 2 years in a row. Mm-hmm. And you know, so there is talent there. And if they're all pro left tackle hadn't got injured a couple weeks ago, then maybe Jason Pierre-Paul doesn't get those two sacks. So, you know, I think he goes back, you know. And the funny thing is, Adam Schefter yesterday was, yeah, really talking about, well, what if, you know, Aaron Rodgers wants to leave? Rodgers has never said that. He's never even inferred it.
You know, I think he's enough to not do that, though. But regardless, I don't think anyone thinks Green Bay would get rid of him. The question is, would he
get
Green Bay?
Well, my point is, I think, and this is a little bit of a different topic, but I think I wonder if some NFL reporters get horny at all the NBA intrigue and they get jealous and they want it to happen. So are they trying to wish Aaron Rodgers, let's start up a controversy because we want to be able to talk about this stuff in the offseason instead of hibernating as the NBA's got, you know, year-round drama?
That's a really good point. The idea of, you know, they covet the intrigue of the NBA. They're coveting another man's wife.
Yes, I do wonder that.
So, okay, do you have anything else you want to add to the NFC game?
No, it's, you know what, it was an entertaining game. I was bummed out they didn't go for it. I wanted to see that game go into overtime. Tampa outplayed Green Bay, and they deserve to be in the Super Bowl. They played twice now. Both times Tampa beat up on Green Bay. Tampa deserves to go to the Super Bowl.
All right, so let's move over to the AFC. And you know I support the Bills, so ask me how I'm feeling about that loss.
How are you feeling about that loss, Bob?
Well, Matt, I'm glad you asked. I'm actually okay, because I didn't think they were as good as KC. And I think last year they were a fringe playoff team. The year before that, they were a mediocre team at best. And now they're the second best team in the conference. So the upward trajectory continues. The fact that KC pulled it together doesn't surprise me. And the fact that Buffalo, as inexperienced as they are in that position, the fact that they didn't rally when facing a juggernaut of a team like that, it wasn't going to be a slugfest. They don't have the power to slug. You know, they need more pass rush. They need a better running game. They're just not quite there yet. But I don't, and for all the little things, like maybe Sean McDermott should have gone for touchdowns instead of field goals, fine. I get that. It doesn't matter. The team is not good enough to beat KC with both of them playing at their best. So I actually feel really good about it, because the outcome was pretty much the best case scenario for this team. They lose in the AFC title game. So I feel great.
Yeah, a big picture, you should feel great when you look at the growth of the team, the growth of Josh Allen. Absolutely. Big picture, you should. You know, you kind of wanted to see a little bit more from Josh Allen, who had a really bad game. Mm-hmm. On the other side, that was Kansas City. That was the best defensive game I've seen them play since early in the year when they shut down, actually, Lamar Jackson and the Ravens. Like, the Chiefs defense, you know, obviously we're going to focus on the offense, but Chiefs defense looked really good.
No, your point's good about the defense. I knew that they were going to score. I didn't know that they could stop the Bills that often and that easily. I was surprised.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And as for Sean McDermott, we actually had a poll question: who is the bigger coward of the county, Sean McDermott or Matt LaFleur? And we said it was McDermott. Like, I think me and my producer, I don't know if we were the hipsters, but you had, you know, right near the end of the half, you're on like the 3-yard line. You don't kick field goals against Kansas City. And the same thing in the third quarter. And the third quarter goal line field goal, or close to the goal line field goal, KC's like, oh, okay, thank you. Two plays later, Tyreek Hill is running for 70 yards and they score moments after that. If I was Buffalo, I wouldn't have bought my field goal kicker. I would have, like, you know what? We're going to leave him at home and bring an extra offensive lineman or something. You know, so I thought the McDermott calls were worse than the LaFleur.
I tend to agree with you, although I had to laugh at the way they were talking about Andy Reid, how it was like he was a playoff inevitability. If you face Andy Reid in the playoffs, you know you're going to lose. Wasn't the shtick on him until he won finally?
Andy, I know.
Reid, what a genius. But he can never win the game.
You know what? All you need to do to fix that narrative is go find a Mahomes. You find a Mahomes, and suddenly it all changes.
Like the Jack Adams in hockey. How many Jack Adams winners for Coach of the Year have one of the best goalies in the league, coincidentally?
Yeah, exactly. Go find Hasek, and you're going to win the Jack Adams. You know, the amount of respect Vegas had for the Chiefs, when you can do live game betting. And when Buffalo went up 9-0, Kansas City was still the favorite to win that game.
Yeah, I know. But honestly, and you and I talked about what's the best narrative. And I had I noticed you put this up on your game day poll, and my option was by far the fourth of four choices. But I think Kansas City winning the Super Bowl is the best thing that can happen for the NFL. And I realized I kind of answered the question wrong when you threw it out. That's not the most intriguing narrative. There were other things that are maybe sexier in the moment. But for the long-term health of the league, having KC become truly ascendant, leagues love dominant teams, and leagues love quarterbacks or alpha players, you know, whether it's a LeBron. I mean, think about baseball, how much baseball has suffered because Mike Trout languishes in Anaheim. When your best player doesn't win, Connor McDavid in Edmonton, it is bad for your league. So watching Mahomes steamroll Buffalo wasn't exactly fun to a Buffalo fan, but for the rest of the league, you should be happy because you want Mahomes to take over for Brady. What you don't want is an interregnum where there's a bunch of guys who are pretty good all facing off against each other, because in 10 years you won't remember any of it.
My pushback to that is the NFL, the Pro Bowl gets better ratings than the NBA Finals. No matter what happens, the health of the league is okay. But like, I wanted Kansas City to lose because I want the spurn team, the revenge, because KC, they're the best team and we all know it. But if Brady wins, I want pissed off Chiefs next year, not, you know, satiated looking for, I mean, I guess, you know what, there's two angles. Next, if KC wins, then they've got a chance for history. Win 3 straight Super Bowls. No team has done it. They lose to Brady, which is kind of fun, and suddenly they're angry team. So it depends. What do you want? Angry or historic?
All right, let's think about this like it was wrestling.
Yeah.
Nobody does narratives quite like wrestling.
True.
So you've got a title match, and you've got the Hulk Hogan in Brady. The guy who's been there a million, the Ric Flair, that's an even better comparison. The Ric Flair, 17 times the world champion. Can he do it one more time? And then you've got the Triple H, the guy who's coming up. He's not that guy anymore, but the guy that you're trying to get over, the one that you're trying to prove belongs on that Mount Rushmore one day. If this was wrestling, what would we do? Would we give The Rock the title, or would we give it to Ric Flair?
Sorry,
it is. I'm betraying when the last time I really watched wrestling was.
Well, I mean, basically, it's around the same time as me. I was going to bring up the Junkyard Dog, you know, just to show my age.
He had Thump written on his butt.
I want the angry, which is weird because I'm a history, you know, I love the history of the NFL. I think that KC is so good that I'm rooting for the unpredictable versus the inevitable.
You see, Apollo Creed wins in Rocky 1.
Yeah.
Which sets up Rocky winning in Rocky 2.
Mm-hmm.
If Rocky wins and Rocky won, there's not enough tension. You don't have the underdog overcoming that insurmountable mountain, right? But I feel like Casey's already done that, though, because they've already won. Like, Casey's already had their Rocky II moment. Now they're trying to do Rocky IV. Can you do it forever?
Should have thrown in the towel.
Poor Apollo. You know, did I ever tell you this story? Quick sidebar. I took my girlfriend in high school to see Rocky IV. And after Apollo, I guess we were like in grade 10 or 11 or whatever. And Apollo dies in the ring, spoiler alert. And I look over and she's got a tear rolling down her cheek. I'm like, you know, how could, you know, what's up? Right. And she goes, well, she felt bad for Drago. He was so misunderstood. She felt bad for Drago.
Who the hell is this psycho that you were dating? No one felt bad for Drago.
Well, she wound up in Montreal's preeminent punk band about 4 years after that.
Of course, she only somebody like, you know, some sort of anarchist punk band, you know, would look at that and flip it around.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Anyway, I thought you would get a kick out of that because I know that for you is like sacrilege.
I know. Jesus. I mean, come on. It was one of the most, you know, the most devastating movie deaths of all time.
Ooh, here's a tough one for you. Here's a Sophie's choice for you, Maddie. Yep. A more painful movie death, Han at the hands of Kylo Ren or Rocky or Apollo at the hands of Drago?
I'm going Han because Han Solo spent, you know, I spent a lot more time in my life with Han Solo, and I may or may not have been a little bit choked up after I left the movie theater because I saw it on my own. I called my girl, and she asked me about the movie, and I might have needed a moment to compose myself about the passing of Han Solo.
I love the fact that you cried leaving the theater. Weeping.
Yeah. Now, hold on. There was none of that. There was a little just choked up, you know, keep it together moment. That's all it was.
I would say that I'm pretty easy to cry at movies. I'm not exactly granite. I cried at Biden's inauguration. I just cry. I'm an Eastern European man. I cry. I'm emotional.
Do you think having a kid, do you think that does that make the waterworks come a little bit more because you have a different perspective on life?
No, I feel like it makes it come less actually, because I'm trying to show that I have some grip on the surroundings. But I guess everybody's just used to it now. Okay, let's get back to the Chiefs and the Bills. So for the Bills, I mean, there's two answers to this question. One is Casey is just better and they were playing really well. But why did Buffalo lose that game?
Actually, you just kind of answered it. Kansas City was fairly healthy. First, I just start with their defense. You know, when they lost their only real game this year to the Raiders, they allowed like Derek Carr to complete like at least 5 or 6 plays of 25, 30 yards or more. They just, the Raiders kept hitting on the deep stuff. None of that was happening. The defense was stepping up. B, Josh Allen, I think the moment just kind of got to him a little bit. You just saw the best version of the Kansas City Chiefs. No one's beating that version. I mean, again, Patrick Mahomes has lost one game in like, you know, the last year and a half. You know, it's the run that he and the Chiefs are on. It's incredible.
You know, and it's not just Mahomes. I think obviously people love Tyreek Hill. Obviously people love Travis Kelce. But can you remember a time when a quarterback had two weapons like that on the same team at the same time?
Let's see. I would go Peyton Manning.
Pardon me.
Peyton Manning with Reggie Wayne and Marvin Harrison. But the only difference there is those were both receivers. So there's a little bit of duplication. This is one at the most productive tight end we've ever seen. And the other is the fastest player.
Yeah, I'm not going to go with that one because as great as Marvin Harrison was, right? So I think he fits the bill. Reggie Wayne was an outstanding player, but Travis Kelce might go down as the best pass catching tight end in history.
That is true.
And Tyreek Hill is probably the single most dangerous non-quarterback offensive weapon in the NFL right now. So as good as Wayne and Harrison were, I don't think they were this good.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of other ones. You know what? Maybe the greatest show on turf with Marshall Faulk and Isaac Bruce and Torrey Holt. You know, that might be the only other one I can think of.
I guess the point that I'm getting at is we love Patrick Mahomes, but the staff that they have assembled around him might be historic in its quality.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Then you got all these other fast receivers like Mecole Hardman. And I know he was out, but Sammy Watkins. And, you know, and then on top of that, you add Eric Bieniemy and Andy Reid. You know, so you've got those guys there that are just cooking stuff up as well.
You know, the greatest show on turf is obviously a good analogy. I was watching Tyreek Hill carve up Tre'Davious White, which nobody does. And I thought, you know, there's just a certain point at which even the best players can't do anything about this. You know, Randy Moss at his best was the kind of player, it doesn't matter what you throw at him, is just too good. Jerry Rice was like that. Jerry Rice, obviously the best ever. But Tyreek Hill was so uncoverable in that game. It's a cliche, but I honestly felt like he could always be open.
He was always open. The only problem is in the first or second drive, he dropped what would have been a 30-40 yard gain, and it didn't matter. I mean, that's the thing with Kansas. That's the thing with Kansas City. They have the largest margin of error. You know, Tampa can win the Super Bowl, but they need to get touchdowns instead of field goals. They're going to have to force some field goals instead of touchdowns and be like a plus one in the turnover ratio. It can happen. It absolutely can happen. KC can make mistakes and still win.
Can I tell you that Tyreek Hill drop was the moment I knew Buffalo was going to lose?
Really?
Yeah, because I thought they escaped danger because he dropped the ball. They didn't escape danger because they prevented him from being in a position to be that open. Because that's just not going to happen all day long. If he's going to be that open all day long, you're just going to get carved up. And that's what wound up happening. No, that's when I said to myself, they can't stop this guy.
Oh, yeah.
And then he'd get a first down and they would throw it to Kelsey, who somehow always managed to be open too.
Every time. Like every time he was, it was incredible. And he had space. Like that's another thing. It wasn't like it was always a perfect throw by Mahomes. It was like Kelsey catches the ball and you're wondering, where's the safety? Where's the linebacker? No one's even close to him.
You know, I don't know enough about NFL defense to say what they should have done. I know enough as a casual fan to say, I don't think there was anything they could have done with the personnel that they had.
Yeah, well, Romo brought up a good point. What they needed to do more was the defensive end, whoever was lined up against Kelsey, had to just go, because you can hit a guy in the first 5 yards, hit Kelsey as hard as you can. Don't worry about rushing Mahomes. Just try to knock Kelsey off his ass and hurt the timing.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because watching Tampa Bay, they finished their hits. And I know that's so a cliche, but like, you saw the aggregate effect, and you pointed this out. Maybe Aaron Rodgers, by the end of the game, was tired of getting bashed around. And I think sometimes in our analytically driven, more modern conception of contact sports, I think sometimes we forget that one of the most effective tools against a good team is to beat the shit out of them.
Yep.
You know, you hit the body enough and the head dies. You know, you're going to give up your big shots or whatever. And I felt like Buffalo didn't do enough to really stick it to Kansas City. It didn't feel like they were ready to fight him. You know what I mean? Maybe that's what
they don't have that guy.
No, I agree. I agree. And that's a roster thing. And if I'm Sean McDermott, I'm thinking, you know what? I may need, like, it sounds like a knuckle-dragging hockey fan thing to say, but I don't care because it's a contact sport. And by dominating contact, you gain an enormous advantage.
Oh, yeah. Listen, Tyrann Mathieu, the honey badger, you know, had some plenty of physical moments. Tampa was physical all the game. Buffalo really, you know, beyond a couple plays, they really weren't. I mean, that's what Buffalo needs. Buffalo needs, you know, one or two impact players in the front seven defensively because, you know, they got everything else going.
Well, think back to that Seattle Seahawks team and the Legion of Boom. It wasn't that they were incredibly fast. It's that if you caught the ball, you were going to pay a price for it.
Yep.
There's a certain conception of sports that I think we've moved away from. And not only do I think strategically it impoverishes the game, but I think just the enjoyment of it too, is if I watch a contact sport, I want to watch guys hit each other. I like it. And we've been sort of conditioned over the last 10 years to feel kind of ambiguous about big hits. But I don't know. Like, if you don't win in the trenches, you don't win. That's true in hockey. That's true in football. It's even true in basketball. If you can't win the battles, like the one-on-one battles, you can't win. Baseball, it's not true. It's a different kind of a game. But for the other three of the big four, you got to be more physical.
You got to be able to hit someone. Yeah, absolutely. It's why we want to see the Leafs tougher.
So question for you. I got a couple rapid fires.
Yeah.
Is Trevor Lawrence going to be a Jag?
Yes.
Should
absolutely.
He?
Absolutely. Yep. No, he should. He should be the number one pick. Absolutely.
Not that someone else would get picked, but if you were Jacksonville, would you rather get the kind of haul you could get for that pick and then sign a Watson or possibly a Matt Stafford?
No, I
that's
because the thing is
all you could get for Trevor Lawrence. Like that's a Herschel Walker's deal.
It is. Oh no, no, it absolutely is the haul. But in the end, you know, look how you win. You know, you need that young elite quarterback. And the thing is, I don't think Matt Stafford's not right for Jacksonville. Matt Stafford is right for a team that already has a lot of other talent around it. You take that chance on Trevor Lawrence. You hang up the phone. You unplug the phone and say, I know I can get all these other things, but a great quarterback can lift you up. You know, so no.
Can I give you my nightmare scenario that I think is going to happen?
Do it.
I really like Matt Stafford. I respect the fact that he has stuck it out with an organization that's been so shit. He's tough. He plays through pain and injury. He's enormously gifted. I like him. And so I'm afraid he's going to Washington, which means I'm going to have to find a way to cheer for Washington, which I don't want to do.
No, but it's easy now. It's easy. I mean, well, it's not easy. You got to ignore, the owner. Yeah. But Ron Rivera. You got Ron. He's fighting through cancer and beating cancer as he was coaching. And you got all these fun players on the defensive line. So you got Ron and you got defense. You got to focus on that.
So here's a sidebar topic. What do you do when a team you hate is building a likable roster? You know,
I see
the Canucks. I find it, despite my instincts, I'm kind of rooting for them and I don't like it. And I'll take it one step further. I'm kind of pulling for the Sens.
That's just because you want the scrappy underdog. You can't root for the Sens. Eugene.
I understand. And the history and the Darcy Tucker and the this and the that. But I love this Stutzla kid. That's an exciting story. I like DJ Smith. Like, I kind of like the team they have. Not the quality of it, but the personnel.
Bob. I can give you good advice that Albert Brooks gave in broadcast news when John Hurt said, you know, what do you do if all your dreams are coming true? And Albert Brooks said, keep it to yourself. And that's what I'm going to say to you, Bob. If you're going to be rooting for the Sens or you're going to be rooting for Bo Horvat or whatever it is you're doing, keep it to yourself.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Shall we talk a little Leafs? I imagine we probably don't have a ton of time left.
We got a little time. Yeah, we'll talk about the Leafs. Also, I want to talk to you just about what's going on with like family and school and all that sort of stuff. But just real quick, the sponsor of this podcast is our lawyer. It is Jeff Pollock. If you need a lawyer, been around for a long time, small firm, jeffpollock.com. That's Jeff with a G, jeffpollock.com, 416-777-0088, 416-777-0088. It's a pizza number. Give them a call. I was driving home, Bob, from Amy's cottage, and do you know what I saw on the road that confused me?
Me driving?
That would. Oh, my God. I think it would have careened into a ditch. No, I saw a school bus because this is way up north. And we're thinking, wait a minute, are they now allowing some in class, like in the northern parts of Ontario? And I had no idea. And we were very confused. But I saw school buses, like the little small ones and stuff. And then I was thinking, huh, what the hell is going on with school? I imagine it's still out, at least in Toronto, for it must be several more weeks before they even consider going back.
It's supposed to be the second week of February. I'd be surprised if it actually was, but the numbers are starting to come down a bit. But even just the language of our politicians, whether municipal or provincial, I don't think anybody wants to be the person who rushed back too quickly. So I think March. I think the end of February, the beginning of March. Just give it a 2-week buffer to see if the numbers continue to spill. The UK variant, the South African variant, this has clearly got people freaked out because it doesn't take long once it catches hold to make those numbers spike. So we're in a weird holding pattern right now. I think there's been some, even if it's not necessarily good news, there hasn't been increasingly bad news. So we'll have to see. But in terms of school, we're starting to see the wheels come off a little bit. There was a bunch of assignments Charlotte didn't do because there was miscommunication, or maybe she's just feeling disconnected from what's going on. So this week is a big catch-up week for us. We had to come to Jesus with her about staying, you know, on top of things. But truthfully, she sits in her pajamas all day at home. Like, it's not easy to stay on top of things, and it's easy to feel like you're on vacation. You know, so I feel bad for these kids in a lot of ways. You know, nothing horrible is happening to them, but there are still expectations on them, and the scenario is just weird.
Yeah.
I don't think they're being harmed in the way some of us are afraid they are. Like, maybe they are. I've known some. I think this is more true of high school students. I think a lot of high school students feel the pressure of trying to get good grades, and that's been extremely hard. But for a kid like Charlotte, like, you know, if she gets an A-minus or a B-plus, like, she's 10 years old. Who cares? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's not like she's trying to get into U of T medicine, and she's been spending, like, the last 4 years trying to get into a good school. Like, she's a kid. But one thing I will say is some teachers are struggling, and I get it. But for those who have struggled and found ways to keep going, man, these people are really doing the Lord's work. Like, they do not get enough credit. 'Cause trying to do a Zoom call with 24 kids and teach them something, man, I watched a little bit of it, and I don't know how they do it. Like, it's amazing.
Oh, yeah. That feels like it's like herding cats, but you're not just herding cats. You're then also trying to teach them the multiplication table.
You know, it's not even, that's exactly it. Like, it's not just to try and keep some sort of focus within the class. It's to impart knowledge within that, too. Like, you know, I worry these kids are going to be behind developmentally, but if everybody is equally behind, then are they behind? You know, it's
yeah, I guess,
it's an invisible standard that we've created and that we're obsessed with keeping up with. And I'm so disappointed to see the lack of imagination on the part of our leaders. You know, like, the greatest, anybody who has a struggle in life knows this is true, even on an individual level. There is the problem, but even greater than the problem itself is the distress that normal no longer exists. Like, you hold yourself to this standard of everything always needs to be the same. And that's just not true. Like, we don't teach these kids ebb and flow, which is true in life. Like, sometimes things are rocking. Sometimes things kind of suck. But don't get down on yourself because they kind of suck. It's inevitable. So I wish we were kind of teaching these kids more than we are. It's okay for things not to always be at top speed. Some teachers are at it, some aren't, you know? Some teachers, that was a bit of a filibuster, and I apologize for it. But if there is one thing to come out of COVID, it's, I hope it would be that we all give ourselves the permission to think of things differently.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's scary to you know, because we like common, you know, we like familiar, mm-hmm. you know, the unfamiliar, that's scary.
You know, this is a great challenge in all of us, right? Like, it is fair and reasonable and even expected to say, if something kind of works, we should stick to it because kind of works is better than chaos.
Yes.
But we also get into this mindset where to question kind of works invites chaos. And I don't know if that's necessarily true. You know, I think
is that the whole good is the enemy of great?
Kind of. And I also think, like, I think in some ways the conservative mindset, and I don't mean politically, I just mean like as a human being, like the instinct to want institutions to hold is a good one. You know, the instinct to say that if we question these institutions, then they may not hold and the problem is going to be greater. I don't know if I buy that,
mm-hmm.
you know, but this is a tough one. This is a tough one. This is one of those great life debates, you know, bird in the hand, we're two in the bush. I don't know.
Bird in your hand makes blowing your nose difficult. You know, that's always been my life philosophy.
All right. Anyway, I've been rambling now. Let's talk about the Leafs. I just bored the hell out of myself.
Nope. We're not going to talk about the Leafs, Bob. We're going to talk about something else.
What's that?
It is, and it's a kind of a depressing topic. Today's the 1 year anniversary of the passing of Kobe.
Oh, right. Okay.
And my thought here because you and I, we grew up the whole age of Kobe as a player. I hated Kobe as a player, the selfishness, the narcissism, you know, the work ethic was incredible, but teammates hated being with him. Even Steve Nash was critical. And near the end of his career, free agents wouldn't go there. No one wanted to be with Kobe. Then there was the sexual assault case in Colorado. There was all these things. And, you know, he never fully got along with Shaq, even though I understand why he didn't, because Shaq was often lazy. But what, I mean, beyond the obvious, horrible, hideous tragedy of what happened, and that's obviously the given on the first level, Kobe was hitting that stage where I was more excited for the second half. I was more interested in what Kobe was going to do after, with basketball being done. And much like with, say, like a Heath Ledger or a Philip Seymour Hoffman, there was part of me that was obviously bummed out because I just wanted to see what that guy had in him. And we never got to see that.
You know, it is so hard to evolve. It's one of the hardest things in life, particularly if you've had some measure of success doing it the way you've always done it. But to come to a point in your life and to find new ways of doing things, it's just so bloody hard and it's so admirable. I think there's another example, not as great as the Kobe one, but that we've seen. It's A-Rod, who was hated as a player, but seems to have found a second wind in his latter part of life where he seems like much more likable and he's contributing in different ways. You know, I feel bad for him in some ways.
By the way, Bob, if I could push back on A-Rod, you know what A-Rod is?
What?
J-Lo is Hasek. Just stand next to J-Lo and suddenly everything's going to be better.
Yeah, there's a Michelle Obama factor there for sure. You know, I would say with Kobe, I'm disappointed not to see what would have happened if someone with that intelligence and drive had decided to do good as opposed to just put baskets in. And you feel like, and I think just if I can flip back to this for one second, I think this is why we should appreciate LeBron in real time, because what he's managing to pull off in terms of balancing excellence of vision and excellence of performance is kind of unprecedented.
Oh, it is. No. You're absolutely right with what LeBron is doing. But it's like, and also everyone's going to remember exactly where they were when you heard the news. We were all the same. We didn't want to believe it. We refreshed our phone 10 times. We checked for extra, for extra sources, and then everyone was just left, I think, gutted by the tragic nature of it all. And then once that passed, then we had that little moment of selfish, which in a way is a tip of the cap to Kobe, where we're like, ah, damn it, that guy was really becoming interesting.
Well, and it was a family tragedy too, which is always how I'm going to remember this, is, you know, the family affected, the families affected.
Of course.
With regards to Kobe, it comes back to winning. And I think we're at a point now in a lot of things where we're wondering, is the price of winning too high? And he's a perfect, in some ways, I don't know how to look at the legacy of Kobe, because I kind of admire the focus on one hand. And there's a lot of artists that I like that were pretty awful human beings, but I love their books or their paintings or whatever. But I think we're all collectively looking around and saying, do we have to be a bunch of assholes in order to have good things? Or can we do it a different way?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I don't think Kobe could have. I think Kobe had only one way, being an asshole. And you know what? You know, it kind of reminds me of a little bit. This is going to be an analogy no one's brought up. Bill Murray. Bill Murray, if you talk to so many people, you know, like, he was hard to get a hold of. He was an asshole. He was a dick on set. Like, you know, but that was his way.
Mm-hmm. You know who the great lost opportunity to see a different way come to the top? When Grant Hill got hurt, Grant Hill had the chance to be Jordan-esque, but with like sort of stately persona of the Grant Hill. When he got hurt, I mean, he's still a Hall of Fame player. He still had a great career, but he could have been like a top five player ever, in my opinion. I mean, when you look at the way he was racking up triple doubles as a young man, he was unstoppable. And he had winning pedigree. He had an incredible sense of team, and he got hurt. I would have loved to have seen what the NBA would look like today and how much it would be Grant Hill's league if he had been healthy. And it's different than Derrick Rose getting hurt, because Derrick Rose was MVP level, but none of us look at Derrick Rose and say, we lost the statesman when his career was held back by injury. But Grant Hill's a bit different, and that's hard for me to say, because he went to Duke, and I hate Duke. And I want and I wanted to hate Grant Hill, but I couldn't. I admired him.
Yeah.
He was friends with Leitner, Matt.
Oh, no. Oh, you can't. Oh, no. The ultimate, one of the most hateable. Hey, you know what?
Through the Bob, back against Kentucky.
Here's the perfect way to end this. You a little bit of Leafs. They take on Calgary tonight. Matthew Tkachuk. It's one of the joys. It's one of the joys in sports is having that guy to root against, having that sports hate. And also, I think a lot of people
Wayne Simmons.
Oh yeah, like. But also, I think some people secretly admire what Matthew Tkachuk is, even when he's, you know, just being dirty with Jack Campbell. We get the joy of Tkachuk in our life tonight.
Matt, for everybody who's criticizing the Leafs because they're too boring and they're not scoring, stop it. They're trying to figure out a different way to play. Now, if you want to say maybe they don't have the depth at forward to be an elite team, that might be true. We'll see. You know, they lost Johnsson and Kapanen, and I think a lot of us were sort of like good riddance to bad contracts. But, you know, it does have an effect. I mean, they're not as effective throughout the lineup anymore. Nick Robertson getting hurt should be a small deal, but it seems to be a big deal. And that probably tells you where they're at with depth. All of that is true. But if you're worried that they're not explosive 5-on-5, stop it. The talent is
there.
They're just trying to figure. They didn't even have a preseason. Stop it.
And also, they're not giving up a lot of goals at 5-on-5. And you know what? The forward depth isn't as great. The defense depth is better. Rasmus Sandin isn't even playing. You know, Travis Dermott is only needed for like 11 minutes a night. You know, those are young guys that last year were counted on more than they are this year.
You know, I heard conversations starting to fire up on Twitter. Should they make a deal? Should they deal some of that defensive depth to try and get another scoring forward? And to that I say, stop it. You can't have enough good young defensemen. Develop them. Don't be panicked.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Games into a weird season. Stop it.
And tonight we get a little bit of sports hate with one of Canada's most delightful villains in Matthew Tkachuk. So that's going to be fun. And absolutely. And by the way, Bob, what's happening right now in the city?
Snow. I looked outside the window, but it's snowing. Okay, yep. I'm going to get going. Charlotte's about to go on recess, and we're going to take the dog out for a walk.
Ooh, okay. Well, careful. It's windy out there. Talk to you next week. All the best, Bob.
All right. Take it easy, Matt.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.